Tom Woods Show, episode 2130.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
Folks, I don't know about you, but I am running into a lot of progressives saying, look, police, fire, schools, these are all great examples of socialism. Well, let's focus on that school example. I've got a free ebook called Education Without the State that makes a pretty darn good case for a stateless approach to education. Pick it up at nostateeducation.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I'm very glad to be joined by our friend, Alan Stevo. Now, you may know Alan from many different capacities. He's a wide-ranging commentator. His most recent books are Face Masks in One Lesson, which we devoted an episode to, and Face Masks Hurt Kids. Well, Alan participated just days ago at a free speech event featuring names like Naomi Wolf and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and I wanted him to join me to talk about that and also to take this opportunity to revisit some of these important issues. So, Alan, welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
All right, tell me about this big event you spoke at alongside some pretty big names.
Oh, this was fantastic. It was Thursday, May 19th, Facebook headquarters, and it was, I got to speak alongside Robert Kennedy Jr., Naomi Wolf, a few other total lions. And the nature of the event was how there's this big tech censorship taking place, and the tone of the event wasn't this pity party, the way these kinds of conversations around big tech end up often. It was more individual accountability and, you know, how do you take the bull by the horns in your own life and make sure you're not censored? And that was really a beautiful kind of sense of passion that was present there.
So what did you say? And how long did you have to talk?
We each had about 5 minutes, 5 to 7 minutes, something like that. And the organizers kept things pretty tight, which I liked.
Yeah,
I especially went into that individual accountability topic of, you know, 50 years ago, you and I wouldn't be having this conversation and no one would be listening to it. It just wouldn't be possible. Maybe we could be on a small radio station having something like this, but even that would be a really difficult thing. Printing presses
and once the live recording, once the live event is over, nobody would ever get a recording of an old radio show. That was it. It was gone. It was in the ether. Forget it.
You're totally right. This kind of moaning about how evil cancel culture is affecting us, you know, maybe we have less freedom right now than we did 5 years ago, right? That's arguable. But to say that where we're at right now is even comparable to 50 years ago, the average person just has so much freedom to get their message out there into the world, no matter how badly canceled they are. I got into this a little bit about the amazing technologies that are out there for us to be taking advantage of. And you know, Google's easy, Facebook's easy, Twitter's easy, and they're more important values to life than simply life being easy. You know, if you go for the things that are maybe a little bit more difficult, it becomes almost impossible to censor a person.
Let's say a little something about your own experience, though, over the past couple of years, because you have been one of the most, I don't know, prolific, I'm not sure what the effective, I don't know, but you've been involved in the movement against the use of masks, especially mask mandates, and showing that they don't work, they cause problems, that there's all these sorts of arguments. And of course, you have your couple of books on the subject. What's it been like promoting something like that on these big platforms, or have you?
Yeah, I had a gift take place in 2020. A lot of what I do, it's important for me to be kind of in my business endeavors to be true to my ideological views. I've been in the Bitcoin industry since 2013. Even that, there's all these people in Bitcoin looking to make money, and money's wonderful, but I'm in it because I want to take down the Fed. So even there, there's ideological pursuits. And in 2020, I had this thing happen to me, which was really miserable. I lost a small fortune by depending on Google for how my business was run. And Google did a very good job canceling me for having not being ideologically pure from Google's perspective. And that hurt. And it didn't have to happen. It didn't have to happen. I could have built my company differently. I could have marketed differently. And you, you do an amazing service for someone who wants to speak out about liberty and not be canceled. You do an amazing service for people who want to be censorship proof. And there's 10,000 ways someone can get censored. there's 10,000 ways around getting censored. So nothing's going to be 100% censorship proof. But the more you choose these 10,000 methods and the more you build them into your business, the harder it becomes to censor a person. And you spend a great deal of effort encouraging your audience toward censorship proofing themselves. I don't know that I've ever heard you use such a term. Maybe you do. But this is kind of the outcome of a lot of the work you do, which is really pretty neat.
I appreciate you saying that. For anybody out there, I think I may have said this once or twice, but who winds up in a situation in which your website gets taken down, you actually get to that level that the hosting provider won't provide hosting anymore, then you contact me and I'll get your website back up. Okay, I have a guy who will, I know a guy, let's just say, who will make darn sure that website gets back up. So don't worry about that. If that ever happens to you, old Wood's going to come bail you out. But with regard to this, it's an interesting thing you mentioned because initially, before this stuff really, really got into high gear, you could say kind of anything you wanted on the big tech platforms because they hadn't adjusted yet. They hadn't figured out exactly what the party line was on each little micro issue. So what I started to do early on, I produced two or three ebooks on the subject of lockdowns and related topics. And I promoted those ebooks through a couple of very, very widely viewed videos. They were viewed as Facebook videos and they were viewed on YouTube. And in those videos, I happened to mention I have this ebook and everybody wanted it. And so in order to get it, you got to sign up for my mailing list. So I was able to build a reader base by doing that. But then what started to happen was if you say things like that on these platforms, they don't let your video get to 1 million, 2 million views. They take it down before it gets to that level. And so I couldn't continue that strategy. But while it worked, the idea of the strategy was I pull all these people onto my platform now, onto my mailing list. And now you're in my world. So, you know, let the world out there go crazy and say crazy things and call me names. But now I've got all these people in my world and I can write to them and communicate with them directly. And even if you're thinking, well, but on the other hand, Woods, you could lose that mailing list. Well, not really. I mean, you always own the list. You can download it at any time, no matter what email program you use, like AWeber, which I use for one of my lists, or any of these others. But I recommend to people, I don't use it myself, but only because I think once you're on a platform, I'm concerned about deliverability problems switching to another platform. But if you're starting from scratch, there's a great censorship-free email platform that my email mentor, Ben Settle, created called Berserker Mail. So I'd recommend people go use Berserker Mail. So you can still carve out your own domain, so to speak, online. You can still do it and be protected from the crazies. It's just, you know, it takes a little bit more research and a little bit more work, but you can do it.
Yesterday, in that vein, I was preparing for the speech and the speech, I was, you know, I started it saying, now, I don't want to hear any more whining from you people. And, you know, I got a little rough during some of it saying, we can't be whining in this special time we're living in. This is really neat. We're living here in Silicon Valley. We have such a neat history of people just hacking systems. And then I kind of talked about how they were hacking, how in their own lives. You know, I said, who here has taken quercetin? Who's taken hydroxychloroquine? Who's taken ivermectin? Who's taken vitamin D? Who's taken vitamin C? You know, people are raising their hands. And I said, this is hacking. This is Silicon Valley hacking. You see some authority is telling you to go 26 steps to go from point A to point B. And you're saying, no, thank you. I'm just going to take the straight line between A and B. And I described this. And so I'm preparing for the speech. And I said, you know, what's the latest thing I've done to innovate the way I'm asking these folks to innovate? And I said, it's time right now. What am I going to do? And I signed up for this service, Textiful. And I was able to say in my speech, I was able to say, I want you to take out your phone right now. I want you to text the number 33777, the word truth. Text the word truth to 33777. And I sent out like a PDF on what search engines do not suck. And when 2020 started, I was starting to see how the search engines were just helping out telling the lies. I recognized we were being lied to. I saw the search engines were helping to lie to folks. So my team and I got together and we spent a few days kind of methodically trying to figure out the algorithms the search engines were using. You know, how exactly are they lying? Who are they censoring? Why are they not why? You can't figure out why they're doing it exactly, but what's going on that's being censored? And the worst search engine I found, we ended up finding like 15 major search engines and calling 15 search engines major is even a stretch. There's probably more like six major search engines. But we went through 15 search engines. 14 of them were totally terrible. The worst, worse than Google, worse than Bing, Bing owned by Bill Gates, worse than Yahoo, was DuckDuckGo. It was the most censored search engine we encountered.
Wow. Okay. What do you use?
I use a whole variety of things right now. There's one that's more kind of crypto-oriented, Brave, that's pretty neat. There's one in Russia called Yandex, and it has its own censorship issues where what isn't attractive to the Kremlin, they will censor. But they're not going to censor what's unattractive to Washington, D.C. So it's not a perfect search engine for all uses, but it's very nice to cut through the Western nonsense, the Western party line. So I use things on a case-by-case basis for what I'm looking for. You got archive.org. The web archive can be a useful search engine, though a little bit more complex to work with. There's kind of like this Luddite trend right now among libertarians and conservatives that bugs me a little bit because it lacks detail for the fine points of some of the beauty of the technology we're living through. Google began with this idea of how do we give the searcher exactly what they're looking for? And this was this is kind of the founding concept of Google. And it's how the search algorithm was written by Larry Page when he was a student still. And it's beautiful stuff, that concept. And there was always this tension, not always, at some point a tension arose in the company between how do I give the person exactly what they're looking for and how do I give the searcher what I want them to see, right? There was this, it's opposed the very idea of search. It became curation instead of search. And I observed around 2015 is where that curation mentality took over Google finally. And Google has just become kind of a curation tool, another way of almost indoctrinating people as opposed to its original idea. And this is something that's missing right now in the marketplace. Someone taking that original idea of Google, even the original Google algorithm was wonderful, and it is no longer under copyright protection. A wonderful search engine could be built simply copying and pasting the original Google algorithm.
Huh. Well, that's quite interesting. I've been very happy, by the way, with something that one of my listeners did just for free. I mean, it's just as a service to the public. He has a website called datahound.net, and it's a series of resources that replace some of the big, censorship happy or privacy compromising platforms. So he's got a bunch of alternatives to Facebook, Google, Chrome, like your browser, video places, texting apps, whatever it is. I mean, VPNs, it's just on and on and on, all the different types of services, things where you can raise money without being censored, everything you can imagine. So I recommend people check it out. And again, it's, you can donate to him if you want, and that's probably not a bad idea, but it's just a service he offered to the public. So datahound.net. On a completely different note, but perhaps not a completely different note, I did not know that you lived in a communist country for 10 years. What country was that and when was it?
Yeah, and thank you. And I was just peeking at DataHound while you were looking at it. This is a cool website.
Yeah,
love it. Thank you for that. Yeah. I lived in former communist Czechoslovakia. So I lived in Bratislava, Slovakia, the capital. I got to teach there for a few years and I became obsessed with this. So Czechoslovakia was considered this, model interwar democracy by the U.S. government and by its aligned political interests. And, there were Wilsonians who wanted to, all kinds of political agendas were served by that idea that it was the model interwar democracy. But it was fairly stable, peaceful, prosperous. And I almost became obsessed with this idea of how could such a prosperous place turn into just such abject totalitarianism, which is what happened from 1948 onward. It just absorbed the most evil aspects of Stalinism. And for a number of years of my life, when I was not working, I was putting so much time into studying totalitarianism in the region and the history of it. And on the weekend, people would invite me to their village to help them, pick potatoes, pick apples, whatever. I'd just help out. I wanted to be part of the culture more and understand it better. And I'd find the oldest person in the village and ask them questions about what their experience with communism was. And I did that over and over again. And I still couldn't get to this one point where, how does it possibly happen that a society shifts into it being okay to adopt totalitarianism? I just couldn't get there. And I said to myself, you know, I'm going to stop this pursuit right now. I'm going to keep that question in the back of my head. Maybe it'll be answered one day. I hope one day I can see that shift happen. And the Ides of March 2020, right around March 15th, in my locality, it was March 17th, the lockdowns went into place. I saw that happen. And I had no question that America was different, not because of the Second Amendment, but America was different because of the churches, that there was something about the structure of churches that would never allow America to slip into that totalitarianism. And I was, that day, I watched basically every church in the state, almost every church, that's not true, almost every church in the state closed down obediently. And the bulwark I was convinced exists did not exist. I think this period of corona communism over the last 2 years where, you know, so many people were given the right reason and said, okay, for that right reason, we will adopt these even more communist policies. That I was able to witness. I maybe wish I didn't witness it, but I was able to witness how that shift happens from a prosperous society into a communist society. And I think we can turn it back.
You don't think there's, I know there are a lot of people who are afraid of this, but you don't think there's a little bit of, exaggeration in talking about maybe communism coming to America? I mean, I'm not quite sure it would be classical communism. I think instead, what's much more likely is a kind of increasingly stultifying society in which a solid 40% think it's the freest society on earth because the stultifying is being done on behalf of things they believe in. And so to them, it doesn't even seem like oppression to the rest of us.
Yeah, I think what you just described, that stultifying nature, that's a spot-on look at things. And my use of the word communism, it's a little loose the way I'm using it. The way I'm using it could just as well fit under, you know, crony capitalism and things like that. And that stultifying nature, Central Europe, the late 1800s, I constantly find bad American ideas that originate from, you know, Prussia in the mid-1800s, the late 1800s, or Austria in the early 1900s, with this very, like, bureaucratic mindset of how culture really has to be as stultified as possible. I like that word you used. And of course, wonderful ideas. We get, you know, Mises lives through basically two raids from the Nazis. So as that society, I think we're going through it now, something similar, as that society kind of ramped up its stultifying nature, the people who refuse to live without freedom also kind of ramped up their game.
I'm thinking about, of course, the situation we're in now, where I don't really like to use the word censorship to refer to what YouTube does or whatever, even though YouTube is completely unreasonable and has been unreasonable with me and they should all go jump in a lake. I do like the word somebody on my show used recently, suppression, because I think suppression is a more accurate descriptor of what's going on. There are certain voices that are being suppressed. And the issue that has confronted libertarians is, how do we deal with this? I mean, and there are a variety of answers. There's the market will solve it because alternatives will pop up. Yeah, that's true. I mean, Parler had trouble because it popped up and then everybody quashed it. But there are alternatives. I mean, MeWe's a pretty good alternative. I'm going to have the head of that company on sometime this week. So there are alternatives. So that's one. Another one is for people to say the government needs to regulate it. Like, normally, we are against government regulation, but in a case like this, where civil society itself is at stake, we need the government to step in to some degree or another. Or they'll say these sites are not actually abiding by their own terms of service, so they should be punished for that. Or that they're not really private companies for one reason or another, or they're acting like there's this and that. There are all these different approaches. What do you think is the correct approach?
You know, I like how you got Del Bigtree at this organization, Texas ICANN. You got Robert Kennedy. I do like something they point out, that if you have Adam Schiff, congressman, calling for censorship of specific voices, and he's close with executives in Silicon Valley, and a week later, you have those exact same voices being censored or suppressed by the exact people he was just speaking to, then it feels to me like there's government overstep there around the First Amendment. And that's like, we got to be real careful with, you know, Steve Bannon, for example. We'll talk about how these companies need to be turned into utilities. And I don't. What a horrible idea to imagine that this show could fall under a regulatory agency someday, all because some other group of people ran their products in a certain way. Somehow Tom Woods ends up getting regulated by that agency, or this data hound guy gets regulated. It's such a strong step away from freedom. I like these arguments that say, if government's involved in decisions at these companies, then that's a problem and government can't be involved there. I like the idea of tying government's hands. It becomes very difficult though, when we can't even tell really, there's so much government involvement in Silicon Valley. There's so much defense work. It's very challenging to draw a line between government and private entity sometimes.
Hey everybody, let's take just a minute to remind you that there are so many things that people can struggle with, like anxiety and depression and stress and relationship issues, and they afflict us for so long and so regularly that we come to assume that this is just part of life, that there's nothing we can do about this. This is just our fate. In fact, we're so caught in it that the very question of whether it could be avoided, whether there's anything that could be done about it, sometimes doesn't even cross our minds. Well, Woods is here to tell you that there is help in the form of our sponsor, BetterHelp. BetterHelp will figure out exactly what it is you need, match you up with a licensed professional therapist who specializes in what you need. It's convenient, professional, and affordable. You can check out the ton of testimonials on their website. And by the way, just in case they don't fix you up with your perfect therapeutic match, they'll get you another one. So many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/woods. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/woods.
Do you have good insight for me on where to draw a line between government and private entities?
I don't know, because the thing is, every time you try to draw that line, it seems to be in the wrong place, because as soon as you start to say, well, the government very mildly subsidizes such and such, so we should treat such and such like a government entity, then before you know it, we're treating the entire economy like a government entity. And so now, basically, what are we favoring? A crazy quilt patchwork of regulations all over the place, because everything to one degree or another is government controlled. I don't think that's a good road to go down.
Yeah.
And it's, in a way, it's like... I frankly think it's analogous to abortion, because whenever you try to tell me what is the number of months after conception that abortion is legitimate, then I always want to know, well, or let's say you would say abortion is illegitimate after 6 months. So you're going to tell me that 5 months and 29 days is okay? Like what makes that okay and not 6 months? You know, it's one of these things where it's so hard to draw a line that makes sense and that doesn't lead you into... Well, gee, then I guess we need to regulate this thing. And I guess we have to treat this whole industry as basically being government-owned. It's a bad road to go down. Now, since we've had Elon Musk come along with Twitter, although there's still some uncertainty about it, I've heard a lot of this kind of die down, because people think, well, we never actually imagined that this would happen, that a billionaire would just go out and buy one of these things and force free speech on it. I think what's likely to happen in the future is either, obviously, we're going to get some entrepreneurial innovation, but we may also just see a bifurcation of the social media world into two different camps. And one camp will have people who just want to plug their ears, and another camp will have a lot of people, you know, who may even annoy you, and you may want to plug your ears because they're so annoying. But at least you'll know that it's, you can always block those people, then they never bother you again. But at least you have the possibility of having a free discussion. I think that's probably where it'll go. Won't necessarily be in the future that we'll all be on one common platform anymore.
It's a good point. And you know, the thing you spoke about with Elon Musk there, no one expected a billionaire would come along and buy something like this. This is when we go down these government roads of regulating, we make those types of behaviors less possible, right? The Central Committee can't predict things that a central committee simply can't predict. Sometimes an Elon Musk comes along, or sometimes the creator of Data Hound comes along and does something that just a central committee can't plan for.
And I guess I don't always go for the argument that, you better not do such and such, because then if your enemies ever get in power, they'll take the reins and use it against you. I don't buy that argument simply because, in my experience, the left will just grab whatever power it wants, regardless of whether we've set a precedent for it or not. You know, so it's not like they say, oh, wait a minute, the last time the conservatives were in power, they did such and such, and now we'll take that and use it for our own. They'll invent it if they have to. They're not waiting to use some precedent that we set. But in this case, I do think that as soon as the Justice Department starts overseeing social media, I think the Justice Department is full of crazy people. And the law schools are full of crazy people. They're full of people who want to censor. They're full of people who think the First Amendment doesn't support quote-unquote hate speech, which is defined as anything they don't like. So I get that the option that I'm proposing with the government completely staying out does mean that you wind up with, in this case, some big tech platforms that are extremely irritating and that do engage in suppression. I don't like that either, and that should be criticized. But what I'm saying is it's all the options are undesirable. That's my point. They're all undesirable. I agree with you. I don't want that system either. But everything I think to replace it with is worse. So basically for right now, I'm happy to see that there are some alternatives popping up and that people are starting to use them. Like, for example, somebody like Glenn Greenwald, who's super influential, is putting his videos on Rumble. Now, Rumble's not ideal. I think the ideal platform, especially now that they solved the buffering problem, is Odyssey. O-D-Y-S-E-E. That's where I have a channel, tomwoods.com/vid, V-I-D, is where you can get right to my Odyssey channel. I like that. But if Glenn Greenwald is using Rumble, then a lot of people are going to go over there. It only takes a handful of high-profile people to switch to one of those big platforms, and you're off to the races. It now becomes self-sustaining. It's not some weirdo thing at the corner of the internet. It seems to me that's got to be the solution, ultimately, even if we have some really, really annoying growing pains right now. What's your alternative that isn't just a pie in the sky, cross your fingers, the Justice Department will solve it? I don't believe that.
What I was saying before, you, for example, provide quite a few ways for people to not be censored, to connect with their audiences, and those ways really exist. And this is, something that's so hopeful for me, the level of totality we can experience right now with there's so much technology in our lives that could end up being controlling of our lives. The level of totalitarianism we can have is so much more complete than anything that existed in Germany in the 30s and 40s or in the USSR in the 40s and 50s, just because of the technology. So this is scary, but there's so many technologies as well that if the person's willing to go through the learning curve, is willing to, you know, scratch the surface a little and figure things out, they have all these options open to them. So this is incredibly promising to me. And I don't think we will end up down that road of this becoming so much worse. And you brought up Greenwald. You know, I was with Kennedy, I was with Wolf, I was with Kevin Jenkins. That there's so many people on the left. You got Matt Taibbi, there are these people who are comfortable on the left who are saying, stop this nonsense. You got Steve Kirsch coming along. And Greenwald, the man, he started a company to compete against the New York Times. He didn't want the censorship, the deep state censorship that exists at the New York Times. And he said, I can do better. I can build a company from the ground up better. It's going to be amazing. And he comes out with the Hunter Biden laptop story effectively. He says, he didn't come out with it, but he said, we need to pay more attention to Biden's dirty background here. And he's doing it 2 weeks before the election, the 2020 election. And his own company that he started, The Intercept, censors him, says, you're not running that. And according to the contract, we're not going to let you run that anywhere. And he ends up on Substack as a result. Right, this is such a dramatic thing that happened to him in his own company. You're supposed to be protected if you start your own company, but even there he wasn't protected, and even he needed to be ready to be flexible and to seek other options for getting his word out.
Let me start wrapping things up by asking you this: what color pill are you?
I haven't paid too much attention to the various pills, to tell you the truth.
All right, I'm going to give you a quick crash course. Okay, so if you've seen The Matrix, or even if you haven't, first
yes,
we have
yes.
the red and the blue. And so the blue is, Wolf Blitzer. Wolf Blitzer's not really blue-pilled, because I'm not sure that, I don't even know that he buys all the things he says. But let's say you believed everything Wolf Blitzer said, you're blue-pilled. if you're red-pilled when you start to look around and say, the world is not as it has been described to me. I take it that is the fundamental, there are a lot of different ways you can be red-pilled, but I think that's the fundamental insight. The world is not the way it has been described to me. Then we have white and black-pilled, which I think have kind of to do with the prospects for the future. So ultimately, things will kind of turn our way, would be more of a white pill, or things are going to get really, really, really atrociously bad is more of a black pill. So if you had to pick one of those, which is, and they're not mutually exclusive, all of them. I mean, you could be red-pilled and white-pilled or red-pilled and black-pilled. What jumps out at you?
What about the Bitcoin orange pill? The Bitcoin folks,
you can invent your own pill. It's a free society, you know?
I'm red-pilled for sure then, based on what you just described, and I'm probably more white-pilled than black-pilled.
So as you depart from yet another appearance on the Tom Woods Show, bearing in mind what pill you are, leave us with some parting thoughts. In light of your pill color, like, why have you chosen it so that people can have something to hang on to as they end up this episode?
I drive up and down the California coast having small organizing meetings, and people who never had any interest in any of this stuff are taking interest, and they're becoming involved in the most complicated ways that a year ago they wouldn't have seen themselves being involved in. Just this gathering yesterday, for example, was the most professionally run political gathering I've ever seen. And this is regular people stepping up and doing that work. I have no question at this point that history is being written right now that's going to be taught 100 years from now. Regular people are stepping up in such a special way. And where adults aren't stepping up, I'm even seeing children. I this little kid, not 5 feet tall, 14 years old, I was able to witness this kid get himself into a school board meeting, no mask, against all kinds of threats, and to end up speaking there to adults, to end up speaking at the meeting. He bent everyone there to his will somehow. And this is a little kid that no one would think anything of. And they threatened him over and over again. I'm watching this heroism over and over again. And then in contrast, I'm seeing the mainstream media or Washington, D.C. talk about the craziest things. If I turn on the news right now, I'm going to find something even more crazy than yesterday. And I don't know what it's going to be. I just know it's going to be even more crazy than yesterday. And sane people don't do that. There are some timeless truths that you can always keep going back to. But we're not living in that moment. We're living in crazy people who are almost behaving like they're in a death rattle. And I'm supposed to listen to their nonsense that I'm losing and to be depressed about it when I simply turn off the TV and I pay attention to the real people that I interact with. I'm seeing how many victories there are. So in light of my pill color, I just see so many victories around me with all the people I get to interact with each day. And they're in the middle of such, California seems to be what they intend the model for the entire United States to be. And these warriors are fighting at the spear tip of this moment and are just constantly experiencing victories. And it's very special.
Well, Alan, I appreciate your time. Is there a website or anywhere people can go to follow what you do?
I have a website that really it's there to join my email list. A lot of my stuff ends up on my email list. Realstevo.com, RealStevo.com, realstevo.com. You sign up there and you're going to get inspiring stuff from me every day. You're going to get ways to get more involved. You'll get neat things like my research on the search engines that don't suck. You know, I'll send that over to you, or I'll send you guides on if face masks are anywhere near your life, that's still, I'll send you ways to get around those. So I want to be a daily resource to people to help them through anything suppressive they're experiencing in life.
All right. Well, very good. I'll have your stuff up at tomwoods.com/2130, our show notes page for today. And thanks again, Alan. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, folks, that's our episode for today. Tomorrow, our friend, the great Alex Epstein, is out with a brand new book, and it is devastating. It is so delicious, this book. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. It's called Fossil Future: Why Global Human Flourishing Requires More Oil, Coal, and Natural Gas, Not Less. Yeah. So make sure and join me for that. And if you like and appreciate what goes on here at the Tom Woods Show, then Old Woods would be very, very grateful to have you as a supporter. And as a supporter of the Tom Woods Show, you're not just a supporter, you're also a getter of things. You get lots of things. Oh my gosh, do I have lots of things. And the more you give, the more you get. Wait till you see all the things that you get. Oh my goodness. Check them out at supportinglisteners.com. I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.